As the House and Senate continue to struggle to find common ground on the issue of immigration reform, one UC Berkeley professor is working to bring us new insights into a significant group of undocumented immigrants here in California and throughout the West, those who pick the food we eat every day. To do so, medical anthropologist Dr. Seth Holmes did something that few others in his profession or the media have done. He became a farm worker himself. For 2 years, he spent summers working with Treaty farm workers in Washington State and here in Madera County. He later moved to Oaxaca in Mexico and lived with the workers there, all the while documenting the physical toll that farm labor took on their bodies. He recounts his story and those of the people he worked with in his new book called Fresh Fruit, Broken Bodies, Migrant Farm Workers in the United States. He joins us today from NPR member station KQED in San Francisco. Dr. Holmes, welcome.
Thank you, Joe.
How did the idea of taking up residence with the farm workers and becoming one yourself, how did you come up with that idea?
As an anthropologist, the kind of research method that I use is often called participant observation. So unlike most research where people would do just interviews or surveys, that would fall under the observation category. As an anthropologist, I also want to participate in the life of the people who I'm trying to understand. And so in order to do that, to understand U.S.-Mexico migration, I really needed to migrate from the U.S. to Mexico and back. And in the process, I lived in labor camps, picked berries in Washington State, lived in an apartment that was bad enough conditions in order to rent to people who don't have a credit history, and pruned vineyards and did other work when it was available, and then went down to their home village in Oaxaca, the state of Oaxaca in southern Mexico, and then crossed the border back into the U.S. We were actually apprehended by the Border Patrol during that crossing in the desert, and then back to Madera and back to Washington again. That was 18 months full-time in the mid-2000s, and then since then I've gone back and visited each of these sites once or twice a year, most years.
And I want to talk about the toll on health in a moment, but first, how did you actually first enter this world? Was that a challenge in and of itself? And what was that like, that first immersion into the world of farm labor and with the Treaty farm workers from Mexico?
I think most anthropologists and probably reporters would tell similar stories of how they gained access to their research site. Mine was somewhat serendipitous. After a fair amount of time trying to find a way to live with and work with farm workers and get to know them, I happened upon the Skagit Valley of Washington State, where my next door neighbor from childhood had become a Methodist minister. And a backpacking guide I used to work with had become a social worker there with undocumented Treaty people. And so the minister introduced me to the farm owner who went to her church, and the social worker introduced me to some of the pickers, and that's sort of how it started. After 5 months living on the farm and picking berries up in Washington State, I moved with an extended family, maybe seven different cars full of people from Oaxaca, from the indigenous group Treaty, down to Madera, California. And the first week we lived out of our cars and used the bathrooms in the city parks before they closed at dusk. And then eventually we found an apartment that would rent to us despite the fact that none of them had bank accounts or credit cards.
Were you at all prepared for the grueling physical nature of the work?
Not at all. I picked 1 or 2 days a week, and in Washington State, the Treaty people picked 7 days a week. In California, by law, farm workers work 6 days a week, which was usually followed, although not always. And the days that I picked, I had knee pain and back pain and hip pain, and my hands would get stained the color of whatever we were picking, strawberries or whatever it was. And then I would kind of recover over the next days while doing interviews of doctors and nurses and farm owners and farm workers and supervisors and other people, whereas the people I worked with did that every single day. So it definitely put the question in my mind, partially about the distinction between skilled labor and unskilled labor, because I was never able to keep up with the farm workers. I worked as hard as I could. I got myself to focus as much as I could. I learned how to pick berries and pop the tops off the berries with each hand. At the same time, I always fell behind. So definitely in that context, I was the unskilled labor and they were very skilled. But in our society, that's not usually how we think about what counts as skill and what doesn't.
Tell us a little more about the people you worked with. Who are the tricky people as a group? And then maybe about some of the individuals that you worked with.
Sure. The Triqui people are an indigenous group native to southern Mexico from the state of Oaxaca. They live by and large up in the mountains of Oaxaca, speak their own language, the Triqui language, which is a tonal language, totally unrelated to Romance languages, Spanish, etc. And by and large, they started migrating to the U.S. over the last 10 to 20 years. And it looks like most of that was in response to international economic changes after things like the North American Free Trade Agreement, which made it harder for them as farmers themselves to survive on their own farms in southern Mexico. So until 10 to 20 years ago, they were all, they had oxen and goats and were growing corn and beans, harvesting those and selling whatever they didn't need to eat in nearby towns in order to pay electricity bills or buy uniforms for the public schools in order for their kids to be able to go to school. But after things like the North American Free Trade Agreement, certain economic shifts happened such that they weren't able to survive. Their corn and beans were being undersold by U.S. corn and beans grown on much larger corporate farms, such that in the end many of them have decided that they needed to migrate to the U.S. to work on our farms in order to survive and in order to send money back to their families so they could continue living there.
Were there any people that stood out that you met, any friendships that developed there, individuals that you might, and stories you might recount with our listeners?
Yes. First, I'd like to say that one of the things I try to do in the book is tell a fair amount of the stories of individuals, because I found the policy debates about immigration reform and immigrants to be relatively devoid of stories of real people. The policy debates often deal with blanket statements about immigrants. Immigrants do this or deserve this or don't deserve that. In the book, one of the people I write about is Samuel. There are some photos of him in the book. He came to the U.S. from San Miguel, which is one of the towns that the Triqui people live in. He came with his wife and son. And I met him when I first started my research in 2003, and then most recently saw him earlier this summer. He's still in the Central Valley of California. He worked on the farms up in Washington State and then came down to Madera County and prune vineyards when there was work available, back and forth for years. And then his family has decided to settle primarily in Madera County for two reasons. One, that crossing the border from Mexico to the U.S. has become more and more dangerous, so it's not possible for him anymore to go home to his hometown to be where his father is and his sister in his ancestral land, so now he's staying in the U.S. The other reason is that he was feeling bad that his son kept getting uprooted from schools, and he really wanted his son to be able to keep up in school and get an education. The last time I visited him, he had just started being able to walk again after being run over by a farm truck last fall in 2012. So he has ongoing stories of suffering and injury related to the work that he does in order to provide us with quality fresh fruit, you know, that we can buy in farmers markets or grocery stores, etc.
If you just joined us on Valley Edition, we're talking with medical anthropologist Dr. Seth Holmes from UC Berkeley. He's the author of a new book called Fresh Fruit, Broken Bodies, Migrant Farm Workers in the United States. And he spent 2 years working as a farm worker with Treaty Farm Workers in Washington State 2 summers and has checked in with those individuals and kept in touch with them ever since. And as a physician, I want to talk to you a little more about the challenges that these folks face. You mentioned the gentleman who was run over by the farm truck. But beyond accidents like that, just the individual toll on individuals' health and doing this type of labor has to be quite significant. What did you see when someone got hurt, when someone got sick? Where did they go? What did they turn to? Was there a clinic that they went to? And what was that like from your perspective?
Good questions, Joe. Part of the reason I named the book Fresh Fruit, Broken Bodies, it was an idea that came out of a conversation with another medical anthropologist, Philippe Bourgois. But the name drives home that there's an exchange of the health of farm workers whose bodies become injured and sick through the hard work that they're doing in pesticides and just bent over with their bodies in exchange for our health, those of us who can buy fresh fruit and vegetables that physicians and public health officials and nurses tell us we need to be eating in order to be healthy. So these people, farm workers, are in a sense, by necessity, sacrificing their own health and their own bodies so that the rest of us can be healthy. The most common health problems that I saw during my research involved injuries, occupational health problems, so chronic back pain, chronic knee pain, knee injuries. Statistically, farm workers have an occupational fatality rate, so death rate due to their work, 5 times higher than the rest of workers in the United States, which is very telling. The injury rate is also much higher than the average worker in the U.S. And these people, to this time, have relatively poor access to health care. There are, in different areas in Washington State and in Madera County, there are migrant health clinics that have gotten grants from the federal government in order to take care of migrant and seasonal farm workers. They're generally under the rubric of federally qualified health centers. So they usually have a sliding scale fee, and they have physicians and nurses who take care of people. They often have bilingual staff. But the system isn't perfect in terms of access to hospitals' ability to pay when they do need to have different kinds of treatment, to the point where a lot of farm workers avoid healthcare and avoid physicians and hospitals because they know that even with a sliding scale, the fees that they'll have to pay are higher than they'll likely be able to.
And of course, in most cases, for most farm workers who are undocumented, the reforms with the Affordable Care Act don't apply. And the money that counties and the state have spent on a lot of those programs are being shifted towards the Affordable Care Act to some degree, providing care to the indigent. What are you seeing in terms of the ability for these individuals to maintain access to what limited care they have right now?
Good point, Joe. So the Affordable Care Act in many ways is laudable, extending healthcare access to many people who haven't been able to have it before. But as you point out, there aren't any provisions for immigrants at this time. So though access overall will go up, the disparity between access for most people and access for immigrants will increase. Immigrants might actually have less access in the future. We're not really sure exactly what that will look like, but there definitely are not provisions for them. Interestingly, in the House of Representatives, immigration reform has been stalled. And one of the reasons that I've seen for the stalling is discussion by different representatives of healthcare access. Specifically, some representatives have said that they will not vote for immigration reform unless there's a guarantee that newly legalizing immigrants will not have access to healthcare for roughly 15 years. Despite paying full taxes. And in my research, seeing that the rest of us are able to eat healthy food and become healthy partially due to the bodily work sacrifice of farm workers, this seems unfair to me, and it looks like this group of people deserve healthcare access for their own health while they're helping us, you know, support our own bodies.
When you were working in the fields alongside these migrant workers, were you working for farmers individually? Were you working for labor contractors? How did that work? What was that dynamic like?
Also a good question. There's a difference in my experience and my research between California and several other states. So in Washington state, all of us, all the Treaty farm workers and myself, all of us were hired by the farm. So each of us had a, you know, employee number. Each of us got a check. We had all the state taxes and Social Security taxes and local taxes taken out of our checks. And we were all paid at least minimum wage, partially because there was this paper trail that could be followed. In California, every time we had work, which was not consistent, we were hired by a labor contractor. And during my research, the farm owners would in California would hire a labor contractor to pick a certain number of fields for a certain amount of money. You know, pick these 30 acres for $5,000 or something like that. And then the contractor would need to go find pickers to come work for them for 2 days or 5 days or however long it would be. But there was no paper trail beyond the contractor. So the contractor had an employee number and got checks from the farmer, but the pickers did not. They got paid by the contractor. And every time that we picked in California, we were always paid under the minimum wage. And I think part of the reason is that there was not a paper trail that could be followed. We also in California had to ride a van that was determined by the labor contractor, often one of their friends or someone in their family or something like that. And each day we would have to pay a certain amount, $5, $10, in order to ride in that van instead of us driving our own cars and carpooling and saving money. So it was definitely less lucrative and felt less fair and less legal in a sense, the way the workers were treated in California.
You did most of your residency, those 18 months in 2003 to 2005, but you've kept in touch with these people. You've visited them every year since for the most part. I'd be curious to learn how things have changed, both on the individual level, but first in the macro sense. We've, in the last 3 years, heard stories about labor shortages, farmers struggling to find enough workers to pick the crops with the tightening of security on the border and immigration enforcement being stepped up in recent years. How have things changed on that level and in other ways in larger sense? And then I'll ask you about the individual stories, maybe how those have changed. But did you see that change in terms of the labor force?
I have. In Washington state this summer, there have been several work stoppages, strikes on berry farms that are much like the farm that I worked on. And the farms have started to look into other means of getting workers besides having migrant farm workers who are already in the U.S. Work for them. And I think part of that is due to tightening of border enforcement, so making it harder for people to come back and forth. Some people have asked me, you know, the kind of question, perennial question of, are these people taking away jobs from U.S. citizens? And why don't U.S. citizens do this work? And in my research, for example, the first summer on the farm, there were five U.S. citizens who started picking. One of them left pretty quickly after about a week. Two of them were too slow and started picking into the same bucket and stayed for about a month. The fourth stayed for a month, and then I was allowed to keep picking despite being too slow because I was an anthropologist and a physician doing research, and the farm owner kind of wanted to learn more about the farm workers and what could be done for them. But in my experience, there aren't U.S. citizens who are willing to do this work, at least at the pay and the way that it's being done right now. And that the more dangerous that the border gets and the more expensive it gets to cross the border, the less people are here to work. I've also seen through my research that the states that are putting together the most kind of drastic immigration reforms are the states where the farmers are having the most difficulty finding pickers. So some of the states in the South, I believe Alabama, have had more difficulty finding pickers because migrants have been avoiding those states.
Have you seen conditions improve in any ways? There have been increased efforts, to some degree at least, to ensure farm worker heat safety so that people aren't suffering heat stroke. Have those been effective? Have you seen anything real in terms of changes on the ground?
I have seen some small changes in the sense that one of the farms I worked on started offering ESL classes, English as a second language classes, because that's what the farm workers were asking for more than anything. Another place I did research put insulation in the kind of cabins, the shacks where the pickers live in labor camps, which helps with heat. But in a sense, since my book has come out, I've been in conversation with several other researchers who have worked on immigration between the U.S. and Mexico, and specifically farm work. And the general consensus is that things have not changed very much. Even when I watch the documentary that Edward Murrow did called Harvest of Shame in the 1960s, not a lot has changed besides the composition of the farm workers. So at that point, the migrants were white and black people going up and down the coasts working on farms. Now it's primarily people from Latin America who are going up and down. But the conditions haven't changed very much. And I think in a sense, it's difficult for some researchers to keep working on this topic because of the relative lack of change over time. I hope that people will pay attention to the stories of real immigrants, including, hopefully, in a sense, people who I write about in the book, and be supportive of immigration reform and of labor reform and agriculture reform and health reform that would actually help these people who are, like we've talked about, working very hard in order to provide us with the fruit and vegetables that we need in order for ourselves to be healthy.
As a physician who's looking at the issues of the long-term health toll that this type of work takes on these farm workers, you've been in touch with these people for now a decade in some cases. What have you seen in their stories? This is the type of work that takes a lot out of individuals. They aren't able to do it for the types of careers that white-collar workers have in the workforce. What did you see in the people that you followed? How have they changed? How has the work changed them?
In a sense, it's expected that everyone's bodies will deteriorate over time doing farm work. It's expected that people will only be able to pick for a certain number of years before they have to do something else, either find a job tying the raspberry plants to the, you know, wooden structures or something where they're standing up more, or if their backs become painful enough, or their hips or their knees, then many of them go back to Mexico and convalesce, are taken care of by their extended family and their relatives back home in Mexico because they can't work anymore. One of the physicians who I quote in the book, talking a fair amount about this, the painfulness, the kind of pain of being a physician, watching all of your patients get sick and watching their bodies deteriorate over time, that physician no longer works in migrant health, partially for that reason. Since the book has come out, he's switched to a different kind of medical work because it was too hard, too painful, too sad to watch all of his farm worker patients develop all the sicknesses and injuries that are most common.
Our guest on Valley Edition today has been Dr. Seth Holmes. He's a medical anthropologist at UC Berkeley, and for 2 years he spent summers working with tricky farm workers in Washington State and here in Madera County. He later moved to Oaxaca in Mexico and lived with the farm workers there, all the while documenting the physical toll that this type of labor has taken on their bodies. His new book is called Fresh Fruit, Broken Bodies, Migrant Farm Workers in the United States. He joined us today from KQED in San Francisco. Dr. Holmes, thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you very much, Joe.